Welcome to another Eyes and Teeth. Pat Nearney is a wonderful Norfolk comedian who I met in Norfolk, funny enough. Almost every time I worked up there, he would be on the bill or in the audience, and he is full of brilliant stories and anecdotes. So today's chat is a delight as we talk about Cromer Pier, Norfolk comedians and accents, Billy Connolly, ventriloquist Brian Chamberlain, Max Miller, the Morton Fraser harmonica gang, and so much more on the big talent of Pat Nearney.
Hi Steve, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. This is the first time I've ever done a face-to-face on Eyes and Teeth, so you're the first guest in the studio.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
Well, I say it's a studio. I'm in a flat in Cromer, but because we're close, I've been trying to get you for a long time, but it's very difficult to get Pat Nearney to stop walking. And you love walking, don't you?
I do, yeah. Last year I was poorly. I had a bit of a heart scare. I'm okay now, and one of the things that the specialist told me was to have plenty of exercise. So I walk probably somewhere around about 30 miles every week.
Wow.
The wife's fed up having to come and pick me up.
30-mile drive every day for her.
But at least I'm fit and well now, so it's
good. Brilliant. Oh, well done, mate. You're looking after yourself, and that's great. And you look great. You look really, really great. But not when you go to Los Angeles. You just told me a story about being in LA. You look a bit older when you're out there, didn't you? Do you want to tell us that story?
I will, yeah. We went on a round-the-world trip, and part of that was going to LA. Just a couple of stories about that. We were staying in a hotel called the Andaz, and evidently it's a very famous hotel where Jim Morrison, the Rolling Stones, used to hang out in the late 60s and whatever. So in any case, we got to this hotel, and when we got in, the gentleman said to us at reception, "Will you go and sit over there? We need to speak to you separately." So we went over, they brought us a cup of coffee over, and about 10 minutes later, this chap came over and said, "Hi, Mr. Patrick, my name's Brandon." And I said, "Oh, that's funny, we've got a Brandon there where we live in Suffolk," just to make conversation. And he said, "I'm sorry," he said, "I have to tell you," he said, "but unfortunately, due to an administrative error at the hotel, we forgot to tell your agents who booked this holiday for you that for the next 5 days in the hotel, we have a porn convention." We wondered whether you wanted to stay, and we said, "Well,
join in."
What can we do? We really can't do much. We didn't know any other hotel.
What positions do you know?
All I know is that room 35, she was giving lessons on the hour, every hour. I don't know what lessons they were, but
You never went?
I didn't go.
Was Sheila not interested?
No, not really. But when we got up the next morning, it was quite strange because when we got
there, was two men in bed with you. sorry, I know you.
That's okay. When we came down to breakfast the next morning, and when we walked into the foyer, there it was absolutely covered with advertisements of people in various stages of undress and whatever, and the hotel was absolutely full of people with cameras and whatever. We did really feel sort of quite awkward.
Oh, did you? Did you go to breakfast that morning?
Was
there a lot of extra sausages?
Yeah,
Baps. Sorry.
Yes, there was plenty of Baps there. But I must tell you that while we were there, we were only about 40, 50 yards away from the LA Comedy Club.
Oh, wow.
And so I said to Sheila, "Well, I'm going to go and see that." And she said, "Well, I'm not really interested in
comedy."
That's why I'm with you. She said, "I'm not really interested in American comedy. I'll stay in the room." So I went down to this place, and that was brilliant. I really enjoyed it. They had about seven or eight acts on, and some of them were really good. And there was one particular man came on right at the end, and he had sort of grey white hair, tanned, and with sort of fairly protruding teeth, and I did sort of think at the time, well, we do look a little bit alike. In any case, when he did a really good act, and when he finished, when he finished, I went over to the bar to have a drink, and I'd been there about 2 or 3 minutes, and suddenly this lady came up and said, "Hey, man, you were great. We really enjoyed it." A couple of minutes, so I'm walking through to go back in, and another lady came up and said, "Hey, man, that was wonderful." Nothing. God, they think I'm this fellow.
In any case, free drinks in there.
Yeah. So in any case, I got lots of compliments, and I went back to the hotel and thought, well, I'll just Google this chap. I can't recall his name now, but I Googled this chap and see who he was. And when I Googled it, he was 86.
Oh, dear.
So that's why they probably got me mugged.
You look good for your age. You look great. You are the tanned, white-haired man with great teeth.
Yeah.
But you're 25 years younger than that, Jen, at least. Or 35. I'm not sure.
I'm actually coming up to my 77th birthday.
77. Oh, bless you, Pat. Yeah, you look great. You look great and you sound great. So we've not had many... we have had a lot of accents on Eyes and Teeth, but we're verging towards the Norfolk accent today, and we've had Ollie Day on the show.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes, and so you're a Norfolk comedian. You're a Norfolk boy, aren't you? You were born here, and you love Norfolk.
I was born in Cromer, and do you want me to just tell you how I started this?
I'd love to know how Pat started, yeah.
Well, what actually happened, I was probably about 25. I'd done one or two bits and pieces, walk-ons in pantomimes and things locally, and somebody phoned me up, a lady phoned me up and said, we're doing a musical, we wondered if you'd like to be in it. And I said, well, I don't really know, what is it? And she said, well, it's called Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and it's about a Bible story. And me being naive, I said to her, and this is the truth, I said, I'm sorry, but I'm not really religious. She said, well, come down and you may like it. So I went down to the hall, and honestly, after about 2 hours, I walked out of there and I couldn't believe. I just thought, this is exactly what I want to do.
Oh, brilliant. And you walked out there with a nice big bright coat on.
No, they didn't have me as Joseph. I was one of the brothers.
Oh, nice.
And... that was a start. So after I'd done that, I then got involved in lots of musicals. I did.
So you got the bug then?
Yes, I did. And I appeared in, I had a good part in Carousel, one of the lead parts in Carousel, one of the lead parts in Oklahoma.
Wow.
Then we did Fiddler on the Roof, lots of different musicals, and I really enjoyed it. Going on from there, I then... was asked, Mumsley Players, who were quite a good drama group, were doing a show called Bless 'Em All.
Oh, yes.
Which was a celebration of VE Day.
Yeah.
Victory in Europe Day.
I've done a few shows like that with Andy Eastwood, you know, he did, and Dougie Chapman used to do those across the country, yeah.
So. Yeah, well, this was a sort of a musical that was put together. It started off with people coming out of the underground stations. And then there was various scenes during the show, like soldiers in trenches. And one of the items in the second half was workers' playtime.
Okay.
Now, you probably don't remember workers' playtime.
Is that a radio show?
That was, yes.
Oh, okay.
And that was on in the 50s, I think.
Right.
I'm not quite sure. But they used to have stars of the day who would go, obviously, into factories and do a show. So the lady who was producing it said, or was directing it, Mary Wiggins, said to me, will you and Bob, who I'll tell you a bit later, will you do Flanagan and Allen underneath the arches and stuff? So I said, yeah, we'll do that. So she said, I also want you to do Max Miller. So I said, I don't do funny walks. And she said, that's not Max Miller, that's Max Wall.
Yeah.
Max Miller I'd heard of, but I hadn't really, you know, seen any of his act or anything.
How old were you at that time?
I was about 40.
Okay.
I was about 40, so
really?
Yeah.
Because I thought you'd loved Max. We'll get on to Max Miller, but I thought you'd been a lifetime fan of Max. So it's quite, you know.
That was how it came about. And Mary's husband, John, was an electrician at, I think he was an electrician, at Anglia TV. And he managed to get me a script of Max Miller.
Wow.
An original script, which I've still got at home somewhere.
Oh, brilliant.
And so I learnt it, and I learnt it parrot fashion. I could probably still do it now if I wanted to, but I learnt it parrot fashion. I was the only Max Miller with a Norfolk accent. Unfortunately, I couldn't. I just really can't lose my accent.
Yeah, because he's from Brighton, wasn't he? And he worked London a lot. Batman's was Brighton, London. But he worked all over the country. Can I ask you to put you on the spot? Can you do a very small bit of the parrot fashion routine? I'd love to hear some.
Yeah, you like the suit. You never lose me in a blackout, lady. Saved up all my coupons to get this, I did. Even a wife likes it. I must tell you about the wife. Big woman, 20 stone she is. What I go through. and that's the sort.
That's nice.
So I did it in this show, and we did the show for about a fortnight, and it went really well. And one of the entertainment managers from the local holiday camp came to see the show and came and saw me afterwards. I think he probably saw me in the pub, I should think, because that's where we used to go down there as soon as we finished the show.
Naturally.
He said to me, would you like to come and do your Max Miller bit in our old time music hall show every Tuesday or whatever? So that's how I started.
Started growing,
I'd done it over a few weeks, and then before I knew what had happened, another holiday camp had phoned me up and said, "Oh, can you come on a Friday and do it at our old time?"
The bookings are coming in,
because that was a thing in at that time where part of the entertainment in holiday camps was like variety.
So
I sort of jumped in at the right time, and
perfect.
I remember when I first started that all the other members of the Ents team were sitting out on the floor with their show, and then they stood up and did their bits, and then I was the guest artist, so I had to stay in the dressing room, and then they introduced me. And I used to be in this dressing room on my own for about sort of 30-35 minutes before I got called on. And I used to think, what am I doing here? What am I doing here? But eventually, after a few weeks, I got into it and started to enjoy it.
Wow.
So that's how it started.
Eyes and teeth.
And after about 2 or 3 years, I must give the man at Munsley, a chap called Brian Day. I don't know if you ever came across him. He was the sort of compere and leader of the Ents team. Really helped me a lot. Used to just give me little tips on.
Oh, that's nice. You always remember them people, don't you, that start you out and sort of give you a little bit of advice.
And I remember one of the things he said to me was, it isn't always what you say, it's the pause in between what you say.
Yes.
And that can be better than the actual words.
In comedy, definitely.
Yeah. And I really did appreciate what Brian did for me. After about 2 or 3 years, he saw me and said, look, you can't keep doing Max Miller forever. Have you thought about doing anything else? And I thought, well, I want to do comedy now because I really enjoy it. Really, the only thing I can do really is like Norfolk comedy, because I've got such a strong accent.
Yeah.
I may as well do that. So I got an act together. I don't think I'm as good as him, but it was a bit like Jethro, but not quite so near the mark.
Right, yeah.
Because I didn't really want to do.
You've always stayed true to yourself, and you're as a clean comedian, and you don't go filthy. It's never over the line. Maybe tickling the line, I guess. But
that's it.
A bit of Max Miller. You know, he never went over the line, did he?
He didn't. And I never I never did use any bad language or anything. But I would sort of push it I sometimes got, I used to quite like pushing it to the limit.
Yes.
And you also knew that in holiday camps, especially ladies, there was a lot of ladies who liked it a bit near the mark.
They enjoy that, don't they?
Yeah.
Filthy.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So I can remember I used to go out, when I first started, I used to go out dressed as a yokel with welly boots on and walk out and sit in the middle of the floor on a stool. And my opening line was, do you mind if I sit down? And they would all say no. I said, because I've got a bad back. I can't get it off the mattress in the mornings. That was my first catch. And what I did, I used to sit on this stool and tell stories. I had probably 10 or 15 minutes that I'd learnt. And then I had a flat cap on, and I used to take, after about 10 minutes, I used to take this cap off and lay it on my lap. And in my cap, I had the next sort of 10 minutes of gags.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I still do that. They're written on the back of my dummies or my scripts. What a great idea, though.
And so I, that way I learned another 10 minutes or whatever.
That's a good 20, 25 minutes then.
And then before I knew it, I sort of got up to 45 minutes quite easily.
But you wore five different hats.
And I was quite lucky. I don't know why. I'm not particularly intelligent, but I could, if I heard a gag and I could put it into my how
repertoire.
I wanted to do it,
yeah.
But I only ever had to tell it once and I could remember it.
Oh, that's
good. Really strange.
Good memory.
And I could remember where it went, you know. So if I had a routine,
all linked together then,
yeah,
all your routines.
And I could pop a gag in somewhere, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could now, but I would at that time.
Oh, I bet you could. I mean, there's something about the Norfolk people that I love, Pat, because I've been coming here for quite a few years. The first season I ever done here was in 1997. I turned professional. That was 25 years ago this year. I was 22 years old, and I was given my first holiday season. So Liffin's Holiday Park in Burgh Castle.
Yes.
That was my first ever holiday park as a professional act.
We call it Burgh Castle.
Burgh Castle. Yeah, you need to remember the dialect and the accents and where you are. I remember being on holiday in where were we? We were not far from here, but we were on the cusp of Norfolk and Suffolk. And I said, oh, I love being in Norfolk. And they went, oh, you're in Suffolk now, boy. You know, you need to get that right. And so I found myself over the last 20, 23 years just coming back. Since that first season in 97, so my career started in Great Yarmouth, Norfolk. And I've just been coming back time after time again. And I was introduced to Cromer. And then I've been doing seasons in Cromer, Thursford, and back in all the holiday parks. And a lot of the theatres around here as well, you know, King's Lynn and Norwich. So it's really been nice to come up here and get to know the Norfolk people. But what is it about the Norfolk people and the humour? Is it the people? Is it the area? Is it the humour? What is it you love about being here? Because
I think there's, in Norfolk, there used to be some lovely comedians. Sadly, one or two of them have gone now, but the Norfolk comedians seem to have a very dry sense of humour.
Yes.
And there was one fella in particular, and funny enough, we were talking about him yesterday, and his name was Muck Carter Lambert.
Well, that's a Norfolk name,
and that's
isn't
a
it?
Record, yeah. Wow. And sadly, he passed away two or three years ago, but he was a wonderful comedian, really dry stuff. And Norfolk people loved him. They gave him a season at one of the holiday camps. I think that was at Vauxhall. I think, I'm not sure. I won't,
right.
Don't quote me on that. And sadly, he died. He just died. The people who were there just didn't appreciate the dryness of his humour.
Is that because they were holidaymakers and
yes.
weren't from Norfolk?
Yeah, I think that's
okay,
right.
But the people
yeah.
in Norfolk thought he'd go great here, but
yeah.
people coming from around the country into Norfolk didn't get the local connotations.
Later on, after I'd started and done this stuff for a few years, by the way, we did actually meet, didn't we, in Norwich. Do you remember
the first meeting we had?
The first time we ever met, we were doing a show for the Norwich Railway Club. And that was it. That was near Norwich Airport. I'll tell you who there was. It was you and Nina. There was Tucker, me, and a lady comedian, a blue comedian.
Blimey.
Comedian. And she just come back from Germany somewhere.
Okay.
And we did this show. I went on first, I think. And then you, Tucker was like the compere as well.
Yeah, this must, obviously this was the early 2000s, was it? Or 2004,
I think that was earlier than that.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, but that was when I first met you. Like, after that, I joined a group, and it was a group called the Press Gang. And this man who got it together, the director, was a chap who lives in Cromer. His name is Keith Skipper.
Okay.
And he was a journalist for the Eastern Daily Press, and quite a raconteur, could tell good stories. And he got a show together, as they call the Press Gang, which was a celebration of the culture of Norfolk. So he had singers, comedians, musicians, actors, poets.
Wow.
And we used to go round. He had a pool of people, say 10 dozen people, and he would pick, say, 6 or 7, and we used to go out to a village somewhere out in the middle of Norfolk somewhere or other.
Nice.
And it wasn't particularly well paid, but I had about 15 years of doing that.
Oh, nice. So it was regular then?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We used to do 20, 25 shows a year.
Oh, brilliant.
On Saturdays. And we used to go around all over the place, Suffolk, Norfolk, Cambridge.
Must have been really nice as a variety team to be doing that tour, you know, because it was primarily a tour, wasn't it?
I mean, we had a man on there, Peter Whitbread, and he was a Shakespearean actor. He'd been with the Royal Shakespeare Company. He's a lovely man. He'd retired, but he was a lovely man. Mm. Used to drive up into the middle of London to do these shows. Used to take this battered old car right in the middle of London. And he used to sit while us comedians did some of our stuff. And he used to say, "I don't know how those boys get away with it." Because we used to tell a few shows.
Yeah, a few naughty, naughty stories.
Yes, that's it.
I do remember when I did come to Cromer, I supported Tucker once. 2004 was the first time I did it. So was that when we first properly met? Or this show might have been way before I met you on the Cromer Pier then. So we probably worked together first.
We did.
Definitely. Oh, okay.
And that was definitely before I met you on Cromer Pier. And then
So Google that.
Yeah, if you have a look, I know it was definitely Norwich Railway Club.
Yeah, now I remember every time I come here, I know you and Sheila, you always come up to see our shows, and I look forward to seeing you, you know, because you're really supportive, and you've always sending me jokes as well. I started to do this routine with Nat King Cole, and you sent me a lovely letter with another 4 or 5 ideas with that, you know.
That's it, yes, yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Leather Van Dross and all that.
Yeah, I quite like writing. When I was at school, I was lucky enough to go to a grammar school. However I got to a grammar school, I don't know. But I went to the same school as Lord Nelson did.
Wow.
Not at the same time. I went at 8:30, he went 8:45. No.
He's here all week,
folks. And a few months ago, I found my report that we used to get a report in a book. And when I was about 13 or 14, my English teacher put against my name, "He seems to be in a fog." And that was the report I got.
Was it really?
And so you'd show how good I was at English. But that turned out that once I started writing, and I'll tell you a little bit about that in a minute, I really enjoyed it. And so now, if I sometimes sit down and I'll just try and write a set of jokes, or try and put it together. And I really enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you that what happened after I'd started doing Max Miller, our local village had a pantomime, and I'd done a couple of walk-on bits, and the two people who had written the pantomime decided, one was a doctor and one was a teacher, they decided to call it a day after about half a dozen of them. So Bob, who I mentioned a bit earlier, and I decided to take it on. And we started, I think in 1981 was the first one.
Right, wow.
And we wrote 27 pantomimes.
So you directed and you wrote the pantomimes really for that company?
Yeah.
Us, 27 years is a long time.
Us two did 27 years.
Oh, that's amazing. You and Bob?
Yeah, we didn't always write them completely new because it was...
It's kind of revamping and sort of recycling, isn't it? But you make it fresh and then you put a bit of topical in there and it looks like a new one, doesn't
that's
it?
That's it. And then I mean, in pantomime, there's a lot of routines, isn't there, that have been carried on from years and years and years.
Yeah, my panto script just arrived yesterday, so there's a few in there.
And we used to sort of adapt those and do some different stuff. And I say, we had some great success. We did really well at it, and we used to get full houses. We used to do six nights, and we filled the thing every.
That's amazing. That was a good success, though. You enjoyed all that. It's community spirit as well, isn't it? Everyone's looking forward to it every year, and you no doubt sell out, you know, because it's sort of small venues like a community hall, but it's going to get packed out, isn't it, with the local people.
That's it.
And the reputation, obviously, was good.
Yeah, and all the... Yes, that's right. The reputation sort of spread. So all the funds that we made used to go towards the local inshore lifeboat. That was...
Helped out local as well.
After we'd been doing it 3 or 4 years, I'd never even thought about doing it, but I started to play the dame. I don't know how many years I did that, but probably 15 years, I should
say. Yeah.
I loved playing the dame. That was just ideal for a comedian because it just gave you carte blanche. You could talk, fit in bits, you could ad lib, and just without.
You know your stuff, don't you? And I've worked with Andre Vincent, who's a brother of Water Rat, and Andre. Yeah. I'm quite surprised because he's a great stand-up comic, but I was quite surprised that he loved playing Dame, and he's always posting pictures every Christmas of him in a dress.
Yeah.
And I'm working this year with Mike Doyle, who's one of my favourite entertainers.
Yeah.
Very funny man, great vocal talent. But he's playing my mum this year in Cardiff. So good comics are great Dames, aren't they?
You just get licensed to sort of... You can go off script if you want, or you can have a bit of audience reaction.
Yeah, you'd always fall back into the same script, don't you? Come back to where you left off.
That's it, yeah.
You can wander anywhere and not go foggy, like your teacher said.
So from there, once I'd done that, started doing them at Munsley, and then I got called to do them at holiday camps.
Nice.
So I then used to write a pantomime, which may be about an hour long. We couldn't do the whole show.
Yes.
I'd pray see one of our pantomimes and put that into one of the holiday camps.
Okay.
We used to do, I don't know, did you ever work at Seacroft at Hemsby?
I think I'd done it once.
That was quite a big place that held about 500, 400, 500.
Okay, the Newport Club I did quite a lot.
Oh yes,
Newport.
Yeah, just down the road. Yeah. And I remember one year we were doing this pantomime, and at that time I was with a chap called Stuart MacDonald.
Right.
And he was an ex manager, and when he was an entertainer on the stage, he actually worked at Cromer Pier. If you have a look when you go into Cromer Pier in 1984, I think he was there. And he was called the Rocking Jock.
Oh really?
A lovely chap.
Obviously Scottish.
Yeah. He used to come on in a kilt and sort of do Elvis, you know, that sort of stuff.
Of course.
So we're doing this pantomime at Hemsby at Seacroft, and we used to start about 9:15. We'd go through till about 10 to 10, and then the manager of the camp said, "You must have a break. so people can get a drink, and then we'll start again at 10:05 and finish at 10:45. So, you know, so fit the pantomime into that. So
nice.
We start off the first pantomime. The first show we did. We started off. We did the first half at 10:50. We stopped so they could all have a drink. When we went out at 10:05, they'd all cleared off home.
No, yeah, you couldn't finish the panto. No,
well, there were a few left, but yeah. You know, everybody just...
oh dear, that's a shame.
By sort of 10:15, they all wanted to go back to the chalet, so we had to sort of...
just cut it down to an hour and make it work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was asked to do a show a couple of weeks ago, and it was these people putting on for a charity evening. They said, can you do half of your show, and then we'll have a singer, and then we'll eat, and then come back and do another. But for a comedy act, it doesn't work to cut up your acts like that, because you're building memento, and
that's it.
And comedy has to be done in 45 minutes to an hour, I think.
But yeah,
the split up. So I said, no, you can do that with the singer, but it's not going to work with me. And I do fit in with sort of, you know, themes of evenings if they want to do that. But you can like do a set and then do a meet and greet sort of thing. But splitting the act up is... It's really awkward, different. Isn't it?
Well, because you get... Well,
especially if the audience don't come back for the second part.
yeah, I often have that. I remember once I was doing the show, and that was a charity show at Britannia Pier.
Oh, yeah.
And I went on the first half and did my bit. And it went okay. Nothing special, but it went okay. And so I got changed... to go and sit in the audience for the second half. And the man who was the director suddenly said, you'll have to go and get changed again, he said, because we've got a group on in the second half and we've got to set the gear up. And we need another sort of 10 minutes. We need someone to do another 10 minutes. So you'll have to do 10 minutes. So I got changed and I said to him, how will I know when you want me to finish? You know? So he said, what I'll do, he said, I'll come up behind the curtain and bang my foot on the stage. So there's me standing there telling jokes, waiting for somebody to go, which he did.
Did he do it? Halfway through your punchline.
That's it, yeah, yeah. And funny enough, when you're talking about punchlines, on Saturday, I did a show Saturday for, it was a charity show, and I just did a half an hour, just to sort of fill in between two other people. I was telling a joke, and something distracted me, I don't know what it was, and I told the wrong punchline.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I got the punchline. That was the biggest laugh of the night.
Was it?
That was, yeah.
Messing jokes up.
Yeah, I said, oh,
2 for 1.
Yeah, I messed that one up and got the biggest laugh of the evening. But I did...
But you got distracted during that.
Did
somebody stamp their foot behind you?
That's me, yeah. It's only in all the years I've done, that's only the second time I've
done that. Oh, that's strange. That. Set up the joke, but gave a different punchline to another joke. But it's still got the biggest laugh of the night.
Yeah,
so
I gave the punchline, but I gave the punchline of the same joke, but I put it in the wrong way.
They're all the right words, but not necessarily in the right order, says Mr. Morecambe. I just talk about some of the humour of Norfolk again, and you've got your own type of humour. It's very relaxed here in Norfolk, isn't it? And you've got the great comedians like Nigel Sayer. I've never seen Nigel. Nigel Boyce Sayer. There's Ollie Day, wonderful Ollie Day.
Lovely man.
And I've worked with Keith Lodes as well at Thursford, and Alan Partridge, of course. And Stephen Fryley's round here, doesn't he?
Yes, so, he does, yeah.
So you've got a lot of nice, because they've all got sort of a lovely delivery, you know, and it means you're comfortable as an audience if you watch someone so laid back. They're listening really intently to the stories. And you are mainly storytellers, aren't you?
Are really. I mean, when you said about Keith Lodes, Keith used to do Thursford. And he really used to storm the place.
Yeah,
People loved his
6 years
stuff.
He done in Thursford before I came along. Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
They love comedy up here, though, don't they? They really do. I mean, if you go to Cromer Pier, I'm doing the pier now. the summer season here in Cromer 2022. They've had some great headliners, but they love their variety as well. And their variety show is still thriving. It's still going. You're coming up Saturday to watch us tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's a fantastic theatre, isn't it? It really is a fantastic theatre.
It's great, yeah. It really makes you feel at home. I feel like it's my second home here.
Yeah, I've been really lucky to work on there lots of times. And just when you, if you tell a gag and you get a really good reaction, you can actually feel it, can't you?
Yeah.
When you're on the stage, you can really feel it coming towards you. Yeah.
It's nice to be back doing that again.
And well, you're actually getting to be a bit of a local now, you know.
I may have to move here one day. Me and Nina have been seriously talking about moving to Norfolk in the future, so we may be neighbours one day. So. That'll annoy you, wouldn't it?
Congregational.
Do you remember watching comedians as a kid? I mean, did you see any locally when you were around Cromer? What was on the pier back then when you was a kid?
I can't really remember much about Cromer.
Nelson,
pier,
right? Yeah. Nelson's comedy act.
He was only on half the time. He was a half Nelson. sorry about that. I can remember when I was a child, we used to go on holiday from Munsley, and we used to go to Yarmouth. That was our holiday.
Okay, the seaside. Yeah, it was verged towards the beach.
Yeah, down towards North Deans, and we used to have a caravan there. And I can remember my father taking me to see George Formby.
Wow.
And George Formby was on at the Windmill Theatre, and I think that was his last season. But I was there on the last performance of that season. My dad took me on that night. Amazing. I can remember that clearly. It was in the 50s, can't tell you exactly when, but I always remember that there was an act on there, and they were called the Morton Fraser Harmonica Gang. Have you ever seen them?
No.
Well, you probably.
No, I heard of them.
Well, that was about four fellas with harmonicas, one with a harmonica a foot long, one, really? All different sort of tones of harmonica, but they had one little dwarf with them, and he was the sort of funny one. So as they were playing the harmonica, you know, he'd probably get on the other fella's knee. So as he was playing,
brilliant.
And if you look, you'll have to just write it down, have a look on YouTube. I'm sure there is something. And one of the members, I found out a few years later, one of the members of that actually lived in Munsley.
Ladies and gentlemen, five harmonicas, four and a half musicians. Who else could it be but the Morton Fraser Harmonica Gang? Paragraph 6, subsection C. Children are only allowed in the club if they are kept under proper control.
I really loved that act. I did for years and years. Yeah, it's strange, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing.
It was a very, very cleverly put together act. And that was really the sort of the first time I can really remember.
A bit of slapstick comedy.
But because as you get older, I mean, obviously the Morecambe and Wise and
Tommy Cooper
and all those, Les Dawson.
Yes, the greats.
The ones, the other night I sat and watched one on TV, and That was Billy Connolly. Billy Connolly was just, genius.
I've watched nearly everything he's done. He is a genius. He's brilliant. It's very sad how his health is declining, but he's still been entertaining us. I saw him, after he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, I saw him at the Hammersmith Apollo in London when I was 16. 30 years later, when I was 46, I went back to the same venue, and he's got this, a disability, but he still delivered the lines, and he wasn't running around anymore, but he was still Billy Connolly.
I'll tell you a little story about that. Do you remember when he did the first joke on Parkinson's about that's where I'm going to park my bike? Well, a few months after that, he came to Great Yarmouth, and at that time, I was working for the gentleman who ran the Pleasure Beach at Great Yarmouth. I was a fruit machine collector. I used to collect the money out of the machines. And one of them I used to go to was the theatre where he was coming to play. So I knew the manager quite well. And I said, oh, I'd love to see him. He said, that's okay, I'll get you a couple of tickets. So got us a couple of tickets, and we were right in the middle at the front, two or three rows back. And I sat next to the mayor and mayoress of Great Yarmouth,
nice,
who were there. And he came on, and within about 10 minutes, I mean, he basically used every word that, that he used.
Yeah.
And I was sitting next to the mayoress, and her face was a picture. She didn't, she was just shocked. But then within about another 10 minutes, she was laughing more than anybody else. Because once you got over the use of
once you got to know him.
Yeah, and once you got over the use of that word, which it wasn't meant as a, I can't really explain, but it wasn't meant as a,
it's not malice. It's in the context of the joke, and it worked. He makes it flow, doesn't he, with the language.
So you couldn't really be offended by it, because it wasn't anything to be offended by. And I also, when I did my act, I'm not thinking I'm comparing myself to Billy Connolly in any way, but I never ever went out to offend anybody.
Yeah,
that wasn't part of my psyche. I didn't ever
have, Pat. You've never upset people.
I did have one occasion when
you'll always get one complaint, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Tell me about that one.
I was doing a golf club, and should I tell you the joke? I mean, if you don't want it in your...
No, go for it, yeah.
So I was just talking about my granny and granddad, and the actual night we were doing it was a St. George's night party. So all these people there were all dressed in the Union Jacks and goodness knows what, and I'm up there doing my bit. So I'm saying about my granny and granddad had been married 60 years and had never had a holiday. So we sent them away to a hotel. And after the first night, they came downstairs the next morning, and at the breakfast table, Granny said to Grandad, she said, do you know what? She said, my breasts are as hot for you as the day we got married 60 years ago. And Grandad said, I'm not surprised, one's in your coffee, one's in your porridge. That was a gag.
That is lovely.
And a man at the front said, that is not appropriate.
No.
He did, he was right in front of me. That is not appropriate.
Do you think the porridge should have been just warm, lukewarm, rather than hot?
I just said, are you joking? And he said, no, I'm not. And that absolutely...
Said, well, I am.
That absolutely killed the night.
Ah.
That did.
One now, person.
Not because of, particularly because of me, I carried on. But the people who were on the table with me
kind of
were
ruined.
Just embarrassed.
Yeah,
they were
course.
Embarrassed for me, really, more than anything.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, but that
the woke culture started back then with your show.
Yeah, and how strange that you do thousands of shows and you remember that one.
That's annoying, isn't it? That's what we have to put up with, and it's because we're worried now that we've upset someone and.
Yeah.
But these days they do, they cancel you, don't they? That's they cancel
it all. If you isn't it funny how you if you've got an audience and you say you're in a you're doing something in a hotel or whatever, where you can see everybody, and you've got maybe 200 people in the room, and there's two people maybe who are not laughing. And don't, why do you just concentrate on them?
Because they're sat right in the front, Pat. Yeah. They always sit at the front, don't they? Yeah. I'm getting it in Cromer. Actually, no one's sitting in the front of Cromer. Because we done opening night last Saturday, and I've been, they asked me if I would do the mask routine. So I am using people in the audience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't always choose to do it, but it's actually going down really well. And Saturday night was a blast. So we had a great, it was a full house. So there were people there. But since the review came out, they say the ventriloquist, his routine relies on audience participation. Yeah. And now the front four rows, since we've had that review, are empty. They're all sitting at the back. They don't want to join in.
Yeah.
Apart from Joe, you know, Joanne, yeah, maybe she's sat there, but I can't get Joe up, bless her. She wouldn't do it. We talked about Norfolk comedians, and I obviously I'm a ventriloquist, and you know that, but there's ventriloquists in different areas. There was Jack Edgar down in Weston-super-Mare. You got in Blackpool was Keith Harris, Arthur Worsley, Steve Hewlett, Jimmy Townley down in Hampshire, Basingstoke. And then in Norfolk, I don't know if there's more than one, but Andy Greaves is from around this area.
Yeah,
so I think he's more up north, but he lives around this area, I believe. But there's also the wonderful Brian Chamberlain I came across on a program called Guys and Dolls in the late 80s. And it was a program of ventriloquists, like the comedians on Granada.
Right.
But it was just vents.
Right.
And you would get Terry Rogers, Shorty Harris, Roger De Corsi was on it, yeah. Jimmy Tamley. There was about 30 ventriloquists on, and it was the first time I saw Brian Chamberlain with a big gorilla.
That's right.
And he also had a skeleton.
Yes.
And I've recently seen a picture because Ollie Day posted it that we'd lost Brian Chamberlain just 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. He was 98 years old, bless
That's
him.
Right. And I was fortunate enough yesterday to go to his funeral.
You was there. I was planning to go, but because of the timing of the show at Cromer, I couldn't risk it. So can you tell me a bit about Brian Chamberlain?
He was a wonderful man. He was really a wonderful man. And when I first started, I ran a club at Hemsby. I was the manager of a holiday camp and a club, the Sundowner Club. And my first season, Brian was one of the cabarets. We used to have four visiting cabarets. Johnny Cleveland, if you know Johnny Cleveland.
Right, yes.
Brian Chamberlain, Mike Lancaster.
Yes, yes.
Mike was my hero, but I'll tell you a bit more about him.
Great comic.
And Brian used to come down, and he was just a wonderful man, a really nice, nice man. And his act was 10, 20 years before its time. He was very innovative. Had really good ideas. He made his own puppets.
He built them himself, yeah. Didn't he?
And there were some really, really funny ones. And I used to go and help him after he'd finished his act. I used to go and help him put the stuff back in his van. But the act used to carry on as he was putting the characters back in the van.
Really?
So he would say to the gorilla, you know, get in the van. And the gorilla is a holy annoyed, but with a little bit more fruity language than that.
Yes.
And he had lots of different characters. I will send you a DVD because I think I sent you one before and it
was blank or it just wouldn't work on my system. So he was at Sheila's
40th birthday.
40th,
which
yeah.
was about 30 years ago, and
wow.
My friend. My best mate had just bought a new video camera, and he said, is it okay if I video the act? So I asked Brian, he said, of course you can. So we have got a perfect recording of his act.
Oh,
it's
amazing.
About 50 minutes or something.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
And really clear. Mm. The room had about 100 people in it, so we had a really good audience. And he had lots of different characters. He had a fish that used to do the weather forecast.
And he used to Michael.
Say, Mike Fish. And he used to say, you know, what's the weather going to be like tomorrow? And this fish used to say, wet.
He's my kind of axe. Yeah, I really wish I'd have seen it.
And he had a mole, a Norfolk mole called Humphrey. He had a newt, Norman Newt, who was drunk.
Because he was a newt.
He had a turkey, and I'll just tell you a little story about this turkey. I hadn't seen this turkey, but Brian was doing Cromer Carnival, and he was doing a show at the White Horse at Cromer, you know, the pub down there.
Yeah.
And he's doing a show during Carnival week. So I said to Sheila, we must go over and see Brian. I haven't seen him for a couple of years or whatever. So we walked in, and Brian was there. He saw us come in, and he had a turkey in his hand. He had this turkey with the wattles, you know, the wattles down the side. And he said to the turkey, oh, look, he said, say hello to Uncle Pat from Munsley. And this turkey said, oh, Uncle Pat from Munsley!
He spoke
the words
like
as a turkey. So you know, just unbelievable. So that brilliant. Was so funny. When he did, I stood there and I thought I was going to collapse. I laughed. I could not stop laughing. And he finished his act off. He had a gorilla called Henry. And this gorilla...
Huge, wasn't he? His actual size, wasn't he, the gorilla?
Yeah, he was, like as big as a human being. But this gorilla, he kept him till the end. And he was behind a screen during the act. And as Brian brought other characters out, this gorilla was making comments. So, you know, he brought a goat out.
All the way through it.
Yeah, and he put the goat back in, and Henry would then say... Can you move this goat? He's doing chocolate drops all over the floor and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And when he brought the gorilla out, then sometime during the act, the gorilla would be singing I Want to Be a Man, Man Cub, whatever that song is.
Jungle Book.
Jungle Book. He used to sing Jungle Book, and halfway through Jungle Book, his head used to jump off. used to jump off the gorilla, and then there would be all sorts of kerfuffle, and he would get the gorilla back together again, but he would put the head on the wrong end, so the gorililla would be upside down.
Oh, that's nice. It's almost like Neville King, a bit, in a way. Neville King and Grandad.
Yes,
yeah.
Like that, yeah.
He used to stick his head back up his bottom, didn't he?
That's not his, but
the dummy's bottom. Yeah.
And that's what Brian used to do, and he used to say, you know, you've got my head stuck up your whatever. But the other thing he had a crow. He had a whistling crow. And
How did he do that?
He used to say to this crow, can you do some bird impressions? And Brian could really whistle. He could really do the whistling, you know. In a monastery garden, that was what they used to do the whistling to. And he used to get this crow, and obviously he couldn't whistle without moving his mouth. So the crow used to say to him, lift my wing up. So he used to lift the wing up and then do the whistling.
Isn't that funny?
And in his funeral service yesterday, the vicar, the father, because that was a Roman Catholic service, the father said, we had lots of fun with Brian. When we used to have the garden parties, he used to sit in the garden and do the whistling, do the bird impressions.
I'm Chamberlain, 91 and a half blackbird.
All of a sudden, Brian would disappear, and then a puppet would come over the hedge and start talking to you. You know, he was a really sweet man.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can say about yesterday was that was one of those times when everything, the whole day, was positive.
That's nice.
That was really positive. Yeah. All his family. He had six children.
Wow.
And his wife was still alive. She must obviously be in her 90s or something. Yes. But it was a celebration.
That's nice.
And he'd lived to 98, yeah. So it was, it was just a lovely day.
Yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't make it in the end. I never met him. I never saw him live, but I'm looking forward to seeing that DVD.
I will definitely get you a copy of that.
I'll mention him in my book, because I've got a great picture now of him, and it'll be nice to give him a mention. Yeah. As one of the greats of Norfolk, you know. I don't know if he ever versed out of Norfolk.
He did. He used to go all over the place.
Okay.
He used to go tour in Germany. He used to tour the army camps.
Wow.
In Germany, there was lots
CSEs
of
CSEs and all that.
Yeah, lots of people, entertainers around here. Eve Bridger, I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
Eve used to go on these tours. I saw Eve. She was there yesterday.
How amazing.
And
that's nice to hear.
Yeah. So Brian, they used to go up to Newcastle, which I think was quite difficult up in the northeast.
Yeah.
And then down into South Wales and do the tours around there. Yeah. So.
Oh, that's amazing. That's really nice to hear a bit more information about him.
Eyes and teeth.
Pat, you're very active on social media, and I love looking at your posts, because we have a nice laugh when Pat's on Facebook. You tell these really nice jokes, and they always make me laugh. But it's not always the jokes that does it; it's what you say after the joke. So you would say like, my budgie fell off his perch, broke his leg yesterday. I made a splint out of Swan Vesta's matches. As soon as he tried to walk, his face lit up. I'm not stopping, I'll get me coat. Yeah, it's that bit, you, the tag at the end.
Yeah.
And then when he said, I'll get me coat, I've been replying to you, and I said, how many coats have you got, Pat? And then you've done another one. There was a robbery on a baker's shop this morning. Please think the Gatoway car was a Rolls. And then you said, start the car. And I said, how many cars do you have, Pat? I like, because I've started this running gag with you now.
Yeah.
I phoned the local aquarium today. They asked so many questions. I inquired, why so many questions? They replied, it's just for training porpoises. I'll find my way out, Pat says. I'm not stopping. And then I says, how many ways out do you have, Pat? I love that running gag we've got. And it's an unwritten rule. No one's told us to do it. It's just fun. I love doing that. So you always find a way of getting out of the gag, you know. So
Well, I actually, that wasn't my idea, really. I picked that up from somebody who I used to work with, was a fella called Barry Santana.
All right. He's great on the guitar.
Yeah.
His brother Carlos.
He was a lovely chap. I mean, you know, had a really exotic name, Barry Santana.
Yeah.
And he came from Bradford. I can't remember but he was a lovely chap. He worked at one of the local holiday camps, and was a brilliant singer and a really funny lad. And he used to go off the stage, and he used to say, "I'm not stopping," or "Start the car," and that was where I really picked it up. With, I'll get the coat. I'm not stopping.
Oh, okay. Well, that's lovely. No, it's funny how that makes me laugh more than the jokes.
Yes,
sometimes.
Because that is, as you say, that's a good way of getting out of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And with an act like mine, it's quite handy.
You need a lot of coats and ways outs and cars started. You're a brilliant comic. It's always lovely to work with you. You're a really nice delivery, and it always get the audience going, and it's important, isn't it, to make people laugh, and that's why we do it.
It was quite sad, really, because when lockdown came, when the COVID thing happened, we had my act had sort of changed a bit. I then went with another fella, and we used to do an act. We carried on this press gang thing, and we used to do an act all over East Anglia. Used to go at Suffolk, up in Lincolnshire. We used to do really well in Lincolnshire for some reason. Me and a chap called Danny Platten, and he was a guitarist, and he used to do a tribute to the Singing Postman.
Did he?
You know, Have You Got a Light Boy, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
the Singing Postman was...
Is that a Norfolk song, that Have You Got a Light Boy?
Yes.
That's a Norfolk song, isn't it?
The Singing Postman wrote that, and he was from Sheringham, just up the way here.
Wow, okay.
And he was a really talented fellow. He wrote some brilliant stuff. And when Keith Skipper finished the press gown, Danny and I started our, someone said, why don't you two get together? So he would do the Singing Postman and a few other different songs, and I would do the Norfolk stuff. And we used to do some Irish stuff, we used to do some Irish singing, and then we had a sing-along at the end, the wartime thing, you know, like Andy Eastwood and that sort of stuff. And we used to call it Wit, Squit and Shenanigans. And you know that was squit in Norfolk is sort of rubbish, you know, and just they say, oh, that's a load of squit.
Oh, okay.
And that's a, so that was how that title got. And we had meant, we had lots of years going around doing that. We every weekend we were out somewhere or other. And then, of course, when COVID came along, we were down in deeper Suffolk somewhere, the last Saturday before COVID, before the shutdown. And then I was poorly about a year after, so I had to sort of cut down my thing. Right. And then Dan, who was my partner in crime, he decided that he didn't really want to do it anymore.
Oh.
So we...
It changed a lot of people's mindset, didn't it? This horrible virus.
Yeah.
Oh, bless. It's really nice to see you in my hometown, actually. I live in Eastbourne, and you pop down a couple of times to the Day by the Sea, which is every June now. Started by Roy Hudd and the Music Hall Society of Great Britain.
Yeah.
And I saw you there a few weeks ago.
I did, yeah. I was lucky enough, when Roy Hudd was alive, I was lucky enough to do a show with him for the Max Miller.
Brilliant.
And that was how I really got into the old time music hall thing.
Yeah.
But I must just say, a couple of weeks ago when we met, that was lovely to meet you there. But we were so pleased to see Bernie Clifton.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's
really brilliant.
He,
funny.
He's 84.
He's amazing, isn't he?
I can't believe it. No. He's 84. And
Makes you feel like a teenager, doesn't he?
He did an act. I mean, he did about three quarters of an hour, and he was hilarious. Really, really good.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
He's natural, is he? He's a natural one.
The last time we came down, not this time, the time before that, we came down, there was a comedian on, and I can't remember his surname. He was from up north somewhere, Bobby somebody.
Bobby Bennett, was it?
No, not Bobby Bennett.
I do know that he passed away a few months later or a year later.
He did. That's right. Yeah, but and he was. He,
it wasn't Billy Bennett. No, it was. No, it was Bobby.
Bobby somebody, and he was. He was a superb pianist as well as a comedian.
But he was in his late 80s when he did it.
And he brought the house down.
I heard that.
And so did Bernie. Mm. So did Bernie Clifton. He brought that. He was
I was gutted I couldn't stay any longer than I did. I sat next to you and Sheila right at the top there at the Hippodrome Theatre.
That's right. Yeah.
In Eastbourne, and it was wonderful. I just caught Richard Gauntlett and his act. He was brilliant. But I was there just to see Alison Steadman being chatted to, you know, by the wonderful Edward Thomas, and that was a great interview, wasn't
it? That was. Yeah.
She told some brilliant stories.
She's a really nice lady. Yeah. She came over really nice.
Yeah.
She?
Lovely. Yeah. Yeah, she's jet-lagged from Australia, but she still did it. But the we see each other also at the Max Miller Appreciation Society. I'm very proud to be a patron. I mean, to be asked is incredible, but to be part of that and see some like-minded people that just love comedy and saving that legacy of Max Miller and his memory and keeping him alive is incredible, isn't it?
Every 3 months there is a magazine coming out.
Yes.
A magazine comes out from there called There'll Never Be Another, which is one of Max Miller's sayings. And the man who puts it together works so hard. They have
a great team there.
They have some brilliant articles in there, and mostly it's mostly Max Miller.
I don't know how they keep getting it out there, because he's not churning out any new material, is he?
I mean, he died in 1962, I think.
It was before I was born.
62 or 63, I'm sure that's when it was.
Yeah.
And they still have a page of Max Miller sightings. So people...
like Elvis and Michael Jackson, is
it? That's it. So like, just say, for instance, there's something on TV by... I write and tell him. Say there's something on TV, a programme, and Max gets mentioned.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's good. So that goes in the magazine.
And then, you know, people just write to...
That's a good idea. I thought you meant that they'd seen him shopping in Tesco's. That's what I mentioned, Elvis. Michael.
Sorry, I was.
Oh, that's brilliant. So anytime someone sees a, he mentioned in EastEnders or something, just something like that little nugget will go in the magazine. And
that's
it's
it, yes.
So Max Miller sighting.
And he gets a, there's a page of them. I mean, that's amazing how many times.
It fills it up.
I mean, somebody will write in, maybe say from Bristol, and say, I was listening to Radio Bristol, and somebody came on there and said, I fell in love with Mary from the Dairy or something. And that will go into the magazine.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky. I've been a member of that thing for about 20 years, and I've kept all the magazines, just for my own personal.
Oh, that's amazing. I was very proud. They asked me to produce a couple of shows. So 2011 and 12, I did that down in Brighton.
And
you were down there, and you were Sheila. While me and Nina was doing the show, you babysat our first daughter, Lola, backstage. Well, she was about 6 months old.
Yeah, and I think I did. Yeah. I did one show for Max. Well, I don't know whether you. I know Tucker was there.
We did do one.
Yeah, and Mickey Tucker. Zaney.
Yes.
He was there as well.
Yeah, we've done a few.
Did one with him.
Yeah. Now, great atmosphere, great people, aren't they?
Mickey Zaney is just I mean,
Mickey's great, yeah. Put Mickey on one of those shows.
Comedian. And so was Tucker. I remember seeing him when he first came to Cromer.
Oh yeah.
Was that with you the first?
He's a Cromer favourite. He'd done a few seasons before he introduced me to the pier. Yeah, so 2004, he'd done a one-man show because he'd done a few seasons, and he asked if I'd support him, so I come up support him. 2006, me and him done the Christmas. And that's where I got to know you a bit more.
But Tucker, he is a tremendous comedian.
Yeah, he's great.
Done really well for himself.
He's done brilliant. He's got an agency now, so he's concentrating on the agency.
Yeah, he actually did 4 or 5 years ago. I was sort of shortlisted to do Cromer Pier, but to do the summer show. And then somebody else got it, but I was down to the last two or three, so it would have been nice to do it, but then
it would have been nice to get one in there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but when I do a show, the one thing that, I'm sorry if I'm rabbiting on a bit, but the one thing
that's
that
what it's all about, mate, on this show.
I always give 100%. I always go out and I always do my best, whether there's 20 people there, whether there's 100 or whether there's 500.
Yeah.
And when I come off,
every person counts.
Yeah, it never matters to me really where I do the show. It doesn't matter to me. And when I do a team show, I'm not interested in what I do.
Yeah.
I'm interested that all goes well for everybody.
Yeah, I feel the same. You know, when we had opening night the other night, I want the dancers to be the best they can be, and I want for them, you know.
Yeah.
I want Ben Nicholas, the host, to get the biggest laughs out there, and I want the singers to, you know, hit the high notes, and you want everyone around you to be happy, because that's what makes a great team. And doing the Cromer show it does make you feel like part of a family, you know. That's why I love coming back.
Yeah,
it's nice to do that. But we want each other to do well.
And of course,
especially when we're on the same show, you don't want to. I guess there are people that come out there and just they want to be the best than anyone on the show. But I'm part of I'm not a leader. I'm part of a team, and I love to be part of a team.
Yeah,
I want Arthur Lager to be funnier than me, obviously.
Yeah, I used to. You know, it was the same in pantomimes. You must get the same thing.
Yeah,
you do get sort of to be like a family, don't you? You all stick together.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it this year.
It'll be
fun.
And in the holiday camps, I used to go down and I would be the sort of main act, and the team were there as well. But I didn't go down there and think, oh, that's all about me, because it wasn't about me. Mm-hmm. It was about the punters going out and saying, we had a really good night.
Yeah, because you got the game shows. They warm them up. They play bingo. So the team are looking after them and they're enjoying it. Then the comedian makes them laugh. The DJ makes them dance, and the bar staff gets some.
That's it. Yeah, no, that's true.
and so it's teamwork, isn't it?
Yeah,
and that's all it is about this business. Is that what you think show business is about? It's about people.
That is, yes. I mean, I was lucky enough to have a business as well as doing this, so I never really did show business full time.
Didn't take it on,
because I had a family and whatever as well, so it just didn't materialise to be a full time job.
Yeah,
but I do admire these people who go round and just go round and do one night is here, there and everywhere, because I would find it really difficult if I died on my backside a couple of nights running.
Yeah, but if you're going to die in Manchester, you're driving home after that, they won't see you again, so it doesn't really matter anymore, does it? And I remember I'd get some great advice from Ken Dodd backstage at the Grand Theatre in Blackpool, 1995. And I remember him saying, he said, Steve, if you struggle, you know, I was 20 when I spoke to him on that night. He'd finished his show at the Grand Theatre. I was in his dressing room. He spoke to me for an hour, just give me advice. And he said, you know, just think of the money. You know, if it's a bad audience, don't worry, just think of the money. Get in your car, turn around and go, and he did that.
Yeah.
And, oh, bless you, you know. Yeah. It's a wonderful business. You can have great nights, but if you have a little struggle, think of the money, drive home and start again the next day. But
I have had bad nights. What I did find that what I did was I used to analyse.
Yeah, we do, especially when you've got a long drive home.
Yeah, and I used to sort of think, why didn't that one go well? Did I not tell it right away? But in the end, you can drive yourself potty because you can do it one night, you can do it somewhere 10 miles away the next night, and it gets a completely different reaction.
I know, yeah. It's like that with dialects as well, I guess. As a Norfolk comedian, you might go down well in Devon or Cornwall or in Suffolk, but if you go to Manchester, you may struggle, you know. Up north, I have a little bit more tricky time, but I'm up for a challenge.
My stuff, I've never really had to go too far north. Grantham was about as far as I got.
All right.
I never went much further than that. Mm. But that always, Norfolk humour always went all right down, sort of down the south of England. Yeah. That was okay. No problems there.
Oh, amazing. Well, Pat Nearney, it's been amazing talking to you and getting to know you a bit more. Thanks for being on Eyes and Teeth. You're a wonderful guest.
Great. Thanks ever so much. But no, I had a lovely time, Steve. You're a great mate. And thanks for inviting me.
Thank you, mate. You've always been a great host to me as well. Love to Sheila. Yeah. And everybody thank Pat Nearney.
Eyes and Teeth.
I really enjoyed that chat with Pat, in my hat. Thank you to the Will Tabbers and Shunters clip on YouTube for the Morton Fraser harmonica gang clip. And to Ollie Day for his private Brian Chamberlain message whistling for us today. To connect with Pat, you can find him on Facebook as Pat Nearney. Always sharing smiles and laughter. Today's quote comes from Alan Partridge from Norfolk, but telling us to go elsewhere. Go to Norfolk. I guarantee you'll either be mugged or not appreciated. Catch the train to London, stopping at Rejection, Disappointment, Backstabbing Central and Shattered Dreams Parkway. The Eyes and Teeth music and jingles are produced and performed by Steve Hewlett. Vocals by Larissa, Lola and Nina Hewlett. Additional vocals by Rich T. The Eyes and Teeth music and jingles are produced and performed by Kevin Dean. Join me on another Eyes and Teeth when I chat to the big talent of Rachel Cantrell-Dean.